This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 10th of March 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, the programme we devote to the world of design each week here on Monocle 24. Today, we look to the African continent for design inspiration as we assess a vast wealth of creativity and increasing commercial importance. We'll be attempting to put our fingers on the pulse of contemporary African design in all its complexities.
There's a lot of trends looking at ecology, sustainable energy, new way of engagement in regards to design. And I think that Africa, in a sense, is a laboratory for most of these conversations.
We'll be speaking to a curator who's gathered dozens of Africa's best designers for a brave new show at the Vitra Design Museum.
Much of what design could and should be in the 21st century is already prevalent and present in Africa.
Plus, we'll celebrate some of Africa's most iconic, if a little dog-eared, modernist architectural masterpieces.
What these buildings show is that an incredible wealth of cultural production exists that needs to be observed.
All that and much more here on Section D, the show dedicated to design from around the world here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Section D with me, Tom Morris. It might seem like an impossible, perhaps even trite curatorial mission, but the people at the Vitra Design Museum near Basel have done it. They've put on a vast show of the best design coming out of Africa today. Making Africa a Continent of Contemporary Design showcases the work of over 120 artists and designers and illustrates how design is undergoing a transformation on the continent, accompanying the economic and political changes there. As part of our special focus on African design, Section D's producer David Pleasant spoke to the exhibition's curator, Amelie Klein.
If we look at a global scale today, I think there is no doubt that we are in the midst of a massive geopolitical, economic, social, cultural, and technological shift. And now, if we want to look at how design could and should react to that or even enhance that shift, I think it makes a lot of sense to look at the Global South and especially at Africa, because much of what design could and should be in the 21st century is already prevalent and present in Africa. And this is basically why we're looking at the continent and at design from that continent.
Maybe can you pick out some designers or some exhibits for us? Try and paint a picture of the exhibition, some of the variety of what we expect to see when we visit.
That is difficult. It's like asking for your favorite child. I think it makes most sense to give you a few examples of what we think design could and should be in the 21st century and explain this by giving you examples from the exhibition. For example, there's one thing that is really almost the first thing to realize when you look at the creative work coming from Africa, that is, it's very, very multidisciplinary. And I think this is something that we should really look for in the 21st century for design, because design has to be more than just, you know, making a chair or making a nice piece of graphic design. Because in the 21st century, I think if we look at where we are right now, our lives and the world is getting more and more complex. And I don't think that the mastership of one single discipline is the appropriate reaction to a complex world. I think we have to master more than one tool and more than one technique to come up with appropriate answers to the complexity of the world that we live in. At the very beginning of the show, there's a piece by a Kenyan. What is he? He's a musician, a graphic designer, a visual artist, a filmmaker, whatever you want to call him. And he made this beautiful mural that says, all oppression is connected, and it's surrounded with a circle of keywords that are all connected to different various kinds of oppression. And it's true, they're all connected in some way. And it's a very beautiful visualization of how to illustrate complexity in a very simple and very beautiful also way.
I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, really that dialogue, that design dialogue that maybe exhibitions like this are trying to foster. What kinds of lessons can we learn or are being learned?
I think there's one thing that is really very interesting if we look at the Global South, and that's informality. If you look at how the city works in throughout the Global South, but let's look at Africa in particular, it's very interesting because something like 70% of the average African city and the economy that thrives these cities is informal. And you might wonder, why does it work? Because, you know, if you look at what looks like chaos at first sight, you would assume this shouldn't work. How is it possible that, you know, the city still works in such an efficient way? For example, there's no real public transport, but then you have these many, many, many little buses that navigate the city very autonomously and self-organized way. And I think informality is something that is a very interesting and important process to look at and to learn from, because this self-organization, this flexibility is something that works very well in times of change and in complex situations. And I think if we look at something that is the new big thing, if you want, in design, the maker culture is something like the informal part of the design world. You know, it's very self-organized. You have these individuals sitting in their little workshops, mending and changing things. And on the other side, you have the very formal design industry where chairs and whatnot are produced in an industrial, mass-produced way. But, you know, very soon we're all going to be makers, because very soon we will have very powerful, quite cheap 3D printers in our homes, like, you know, the revolution of desktop publishing a few decades ago, and we will all be makers.
That was Amélie Klein, curator of Making Africa, a Continent of Contemporary Design, at the Vitra Design Museum. The exhibition opens this week and continues until September before heading on to Bilbao's Guggenheim Museum. You're listening to Section D with me, Tom Morris. I'm now joined in the studio by two of the designers featured in that exhibition. French-born Pierre-Christophe Gam has specialised in art direction for many luxury brands, including Kenzo, Martin Margiela and Shiseido, and is also the director of African design store Afropolis in London. I'm also joined by Nigerian architect and furniture designer Ifeanyi Oganwu, whose strikingly sleek pieces have been exhibited worldwide.
Ifeanyi, if you'd start, what are you participating in the show?
At the show, I'm presenting a work called Splice. Mm-hmm. It's a stool I made in 2012. Basically, I have a studio in London, Expand Design Limited, and I made this stool in aluminium in a kind of workshop in Coventry where we explored like hand forming complex like curvatures over like a 3D surface. So it's a very compact, very kind of like futuristic looking piece of design, which is going to be part of the show.
Yeah. And Pierre?
Yes. So on the show, I participated first as an advisor. So I was advising Amélie Klein, the curator. And as well, I'm contributing with two pieces. So the first one is a graphic project that I did a few years back for an artist, which was a mix of illustration, photography, and animated work. And the second part is going to be an installation, which actually is not going to be visible this time, but it's going to be visible in Bilbao for the second part. And this is an installation of table and furniture.
And Pierre, why do you think this is sort of happening now? I mean, obviously, you know, Africa is an incredibly sort of emerging, not market, I mean, you know, many, many markets, but, you know, there's incredible wealth there. There's a great new understanding of design. There is, you know, some sort of pockets of really great design. Mm-hmm. Why do you think now it's appropriate to do a show like this, which kind of looks back, but also it's very much looking forward?
I think that over the last 10, 15 years, the African continent has been through a big economic transformation, economic boom. But alongside that, there's been an important cultural revolution among the Africans, but as well throughout the diaspora. And this is something that can be reflected through design. And I think that what is happening in Africa is very much in a parallel of what is happening in the world globally. There's a lot of trends looking at ecology, sustainable energy, new way of engagement in regards to design. And I think that Africa, in a sense, is a laboratory for most of these conversations. Yeah. And I think what you have specifically with the show is that the Vitrave Museum before used to really much look at design as a separate thing. And what you have in the continent is that it's very much more part of life. Sociological conversation is much more part of life. So there's not so much a distinction between design, graphic, art. Everything is embedded together. Mm. And what is interesting is to see what are the tools, the new ways that African designers are using in order to raise their voice.
And what extent do you both see your work as African? I mean, you're sort of born and raised in Paris. Your work is incredibly, I guess, identityless in a way. You know, you work with marble, you work with very sort of high pristine materials. It's not what one would expect of something called African design. Do either of you kind of see yourself working in that compass?
I think my training in architecture, maybe because I didn't have a formal training in Nigeria. So I started in Chicago, London, and then finally in New York. And also my work experience has been so in architecture and engineering. So a lot of my work deals with that sort of area between engineering, forms, structures, and, you know, like, I guess like there's some universal aspects which can be sort of traced back to African art, maybe sculpture, maybe like the relationship between volume and light and those aspects. But generally, I think you're very correct in terms of its identity-less. I think it sort of follows its reason for being, which is like exploring a certain relationship between a material or a certain relationship between technology and, you know, manufacturing and things like that.
And Pierre, I mean, your work is a bit more difficult to sort of pin down because you work across so many different sectors. Yeah. Again, none of which look particularly African. What do you respond to that?
I mean, really, I guess defining something as African design can be a bit complex.
Yes.
But I would say that, but I think it's more in the sense of the inferences and the references that I take within my work. Obviously, there's a mix of my bringing, of the reference that I have for my education in the West, etc. But I really dig a lot into some of the concerns, some of the intellectual reflections that are happening on the continent. And I go a lot back and forth. So for example, the two projects that will be presented at Vitra specifically looking at African conversation. One is the Kingdom of Taliem, basically the Kingdom of Congo, which was for a Singer project. And this project was mixing old engravings, old photography from the late 19th century made in Africa with illustration, graphic, and so on. So this is very much kind of reimagining Africa. And the second project, it's an installation looking at the life and legacy of Thomas Sankara, which was the president of Burkina Faso. And this work is very much more looking at Africa, because the whole idea is basically is that using wax, African fabric, you know, which have African printed fabric, which are used very often by women as a medium to share ideas, value during political elections and things like that. And so here in this case, the project is called the 10 Works of Sankara. And I have 10 different patterns, and each of the patterns is lighting one of the main achievements of Sankara during his presidency. And everything is presented through the format of an installation. So we have reconstructing the last meeting that Thomas Sankara had before he was killed. So I think when you look at the African diaspora, I'm sure even a lot of the artists that are involved in the show have roots abroad and on the continent. Or either way, they're just inspired by things from outside. You know, Africa is a very much more connected place. And in the idea that, you know, our work would be not so much what people would expect to be African design. I think this is what is interesting in this conversation, is the fact that Africa, as much as it's a continent, has been very much perceived from a very limited window for many years. And people are not used to equate Africa with the idea of innovation, you know, of modernity, which what is Africa is all about.
And if we're sort of trying to think more local and sort of get away from this sort of general idea of African design, are there any kind of, I think the world always sort of associates, you know, Cape Town, it was World Design Capital last year. What are the other kind of interesting hotspots or design hubs in Africa?
I think what can be first understood in regards to Africa is that design in Africa is very much everywhere, because you have carpenters, you have tailors, and it's very common for women to go and design their own clothes. You know, when there's a wedding, when there's a ceremony, everybody's a designer in a sense, and it's part of the culture. Growing up, my mom, we had a carpenter, and my mom was designing, you know, the way she wanted the kitchen to be, the tables, etc. So it's very much more part of the thinking of people to design constantly. And design is something that is accessible. But in regards to this idea of creation, I think you have places like Senegal, which has a lot of workshops of artisans and artists, designer. And that is very much diverse in regards to furniture, to artifact, but as well to fabric. And it's very much deeply rooted in the tradition and the culture. You have the same thing as well in Mali. But then I believe that throughout the continent, you're going to have that sense of understanding of... Because I think here, you know, with this design, I guess maybe in the 16th, 19th century, it was everybody was pretty much designing their own thing. Or they were working based, they had the reference, and they were evolving on it, making their own stamp. But in Africa, this is what people do every day.
My last question is, I mean, this show at Vitra is all about the potential for design in Africa. Mm-hmm. What do you think that is sort of now, if we are making a line under history of what's come before and it's a sort of new epoch for African design? What do you think is the potential for the industry there?
I think that, you know, what is interesting is that now this is being looked as a new conversation about African design. But if we go back in time, even before, because the show at Vitra start looking at the, you know, post-independence, so early 16th century. But if you go to the early 20th century, African art and design was already part of the global conversation. Because when you think about modern art started through Picasso. Mm-hmm. And it started with his introduction to African classic art, you know, sculpture, artifact, and so on. And there was a big shift, and this has been inspiring the West for many years. You know, one thing inspired, and then you have reference that is evolved. Mm. And at the end, it's kind of, you know, you have the apple, you make an apple pie from it, but you forget about the branch, the tree, and the roots. So Africa is already very much more part of the global conversation. But I think now it's a new look, it's a new perspective, and very much more tied with a global conversation with, you know, what is happening in the world. I believe in regards to, you know, geopolitics, you know, you have the crisis, you know, the economic crisis that took place in the West a few years back that is still, we're still on. You have the rise of China, you have the rise of India and the rise of Africa. And you have this concept of the idea of the Shinji Africa, where, you know, the three big poles of economic, you know, exchange in the few years to come will be on the African continent. In Africa, you have this idea of leapfrog development, which is the sense that, you know, Africa in a sense is capitalizing on the new technology, on a new innovation, and is much more flexible and agile in order to be responsive to progress in many ways. And the idea is that Africa will be jumping the 20th century to go to straight to the next. Yeah. And I think that what you see in African design and what you see globally is that there's a big return to the idea of craftsmanship, you know, handmade work. And in a sense, this is very much more part of African philosophy. Mm. And, you know, I think there's the idea of, I call it naturalism, you know, you have the idea of having looking at food, organic, sustainability, I mean, all of this kind of global concern that you have throughout the world. And Africa, because of its identity, its culture, and its tradition, is already very much rooted into that. Mm. And so I think Africa, in a sense, is going to be a hub for exploration, but for inspiration for the world.
Thank you to my guests, Pierre-Christophe Gam of African design store Afropolis, and architect and furniture designer Ifeni Oganwu. You're listening to Section D with me, Tom Morris, where we will be back straight after this.
They have reported, listened, watched, quizzed and cajoled. They've been to farms and galleries, conclaves and bars. They've reported from the high north and tropical metropolises. And you? Well, all you need to do is turn the dial, click our app, or pop in your headphones and head off on an audio tour of the spikiest, juiciest, funniest moments from Monocle 24's week that was. The Curator is our one-hour show that informs, entertains, and surprises the best bits from all of our magazine shows. From the urbanist to the menu, the stack to the entrepreneurs, the culture show to Section D. Premiering live every Saturday at 9 a.m. London time. You can also subscribe to the programme at monocle.com or on iTunes or SoundCloud to ensure you never miss a beat. Come on, let's catch up this weekend. Listen to The Curator.
You're listening to Section D with me, Tom Morris. Now, as we try and gauge what and who is making Africa's design industry tick, we couldn't not discuss the continent's largest design gathering. Design Indaba, which closed last week, is held in Cape Town and celebrated its 20th anniversary this year. It's now become the most respected platform for international designers in Africa, as well as a window into the talents and creativity of an often overlooked continent. I caught up with director and founder of Design Indaba, Ravi Naidu, over the phone.
Well, it was our biggest ever, which is fantastic. And, you know, as we've got more confidence in with the platform, we've diversified a fair bit. So this year you had a conference, which was our biggest ever. It's the world's biggest design conference, with just over 4,000 delegates. Then we had an exposition of African design. We had a film festival, which was sold out for the full duration with 13 premieres of, you know, movies hitherto not seen in Africa. And then we had a music festival, and we also had an art platform as well. And we did a very special opera that was put together by William, one of our most famous artists in the country. And so the platform is really diverse. We had some 70,000 people across the five platforms.
Wow. I mean, that's a huge kind of array of things to be going on. Over the past 20 years, how have you seen not only the event grow, which it has kind of hugely, but also have you noticed the world's kind of interest and understanding of African design change and mature?
Absolutely. And I think we've seen, quite frankly, just if you had to look at the economic impact of the expo, which largely showcases young African designers. We had some 600 odd this year. And the buyers that can now come in from all around the world, largely on their own steam, coming from as far afield as San Francisco and Tokyo, to buy African creative produce. And that's been quite magnificent. And we just recently had a survey done by the Graduate School of Business at the University of Cape Town, which is Africa's preeminent business school. And they calculated that in the last 5 years, $1.7 billion has been added to the economy, and that's mostly to the sales of the produce of these young African designers.
Incredible. What do you think when all these international buyers come to Cape Town for the show, and there are plenty of design shows around the world to sort of compete with, what do you think they're looking for? What do you think they get enthusiastic about when they see all the design coming from the continent?
In many instances, it's a voice that the world hasn't heard yet, particularly in terms of design. Young Africans who are mining their heritage, mining their own stories, and are not to Art Milan, Milan, or Art London, London, but are going on their own journeys. And they, you know, producing stuff in a voice the world hasn't heard yet. And I think that's what's to be celebrated. So I think it does have a bit of a novelty value. We found increased interest. And if you see, you know, the kind of showcases of African design that are starting to emerge. And I think the big aspect of it is the confidence that I'm seeing from young African designers to be able to go out there and tell their stories.
And also my last question is, I mean, last year Cape Town celebrated being a world design capital, which, you know, was slightly controversial, you know, a year on. What do you think that event did to change the world's perception of design in the city and in the country of South Africa and in the continent of Africa? Has it been beneficial, or did it sort of kind of pass without trace, do you think?
I think it disappeared without trace. I think it was a politically motivated effort, and it was largely run by people with no background in design. So I think it really pushed the dial in terms of having really any impact on the industry itself. So it was largely a promotional campaign. It was largely led by PR and not too much really to be an enabling platform for design and designers in the region. It happened. It started very late, and it kind of disappeared without a trace.
That was Ravi Naidu there, founder and director of Africa's largest design fair, Design Indaba, which was held in Cape Town last month. This is Section D on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Morris. Now to end the show, African design may be a little less known throughout the world, but its architectural prowess, especially its heritage of modernism, is still globally recognised as some of the most bonkers and brave buildings the world has ever seen, if a little dog-eared now. Architecture of Independence, African Modernism, is a show also being held at the Vitra Design Museum and features 80 buildings in 5 countries in an effort to illustrate the links between architecture and the process of nation-building in post-colonial Africa. We spoke to Manuel Hertz, architect and author of the book which accompanies that show.
We can observe quite a number of buildings that were built in the 1960s and 1970s in the countries of sub-Saharan Africa that are of exceptional architectural quality. These buildings are not known outside of their countries, and in my opinion, it is very important for us to become aware of them because they paint a picture of this continent which is radically different from what we know usually. When we think of Africa, we usually think of desperation, lack, or misery. And what these buildings show is that an incredible wealth of cultural production exists that needs to be seen, that needs to be observed. The buildings that are shown in the exhibition and in the book played a very important role in the time of independence. These were, in a way, the vehicles of the nations to become independent. I want to mention two buildings in particular. One is the Kenyatta International Conference Center in Nairobi, which was built in 1973 and opened to host the first meeting of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank in Nairobi. It was the first meeting of that kind ever to take place on the African continent, and it really propelled the country forward. Nairobi, Nairobi,
Nairobi, Nairobi. Whether from far away or right up close, the Kenyatta International Conference Center is really hard to miss.
The building consists of a high tower and a lower plinth building, both topped by a petal-like structure. Internally, it consists of like an exciting world of concrete bears and floating structures, which are very kind of three-dimensionally. The population in Nairobi and even further on in Kenya is very proud of the building. It's recognized as maybe the most famous structure, the most famous high-rise building of the country, and it has become the symbol of the country and further on the symbol of independence. Baby Philippe l'arrangeur au doigté recherché. The other example is Hotel Ivoire, a glamorous hotel which was designed in the 1960s in Abidjan, the largest city of the Ivory Coast, initiated by the then president of the country. It was the most glamorous hotel of its time in Western Africa and maybe even beyond, featuring vast pools, luxurious restaurants, and very luxurious rooms. And it attracted the jet-setter generation of its time. It played a role by hosting various political conferences in kind of following the political development of the country, but it also fell into disrepair in the 1980s and 1990s, specifically when also the country disintegrated into internal conflict. It even became the base of various militia groups once the hotel was not functioning as such anymore, and maybe reached its lowest point when in 2004 it was used as a base by French UN troops who from the hotel shot a number of Ivoirians who were protesting against the French. In the last few years it has been renovated and reopened and kind of links back to its glamorous part. What can be said of the hotel following all the country's ups and downs is that it's in a way an alter ego of the country, that it tells a parallel story of the country's development. Both examples show in a way is that it is not only about high quality architecture, but that this architecture really has a political dimension, that it shows the urgency and the kind of importance of this architecture playing a formational role in the country's development.
That was the voice of Manuel Hertz, architect and curator of Architecture of Independence, African Modernism, which is on now at the Vitra Design Museum. And that is all we have time for in this African Design special edition of Section D. Today's show is produced by David Pleasant and edited by Alex Funnell. You can contact the producer David at dmp@monocle.com if you'd like to feature on the show or if you have any comments or questions. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.